You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Weber, and this is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing from Congressman Lee Zeldin, currently representing New York's 1st District and candidate for governor of New York. But before we turn to that interview, I want to share with you some facts about Biden's handling of the economy. Now, recent polls indicate that a majority of voters disapprove as inflation worsens and recovery slows. And Americans, well, we're feeling it. While millions of Americans are still struggling to recover from the economic hardship brought on by the pandemic, Democrats apparently believe now is the time for a giant tax hike. If signed into law, their $3.5 trillion spending plan would amount to the largest expansion of the welfare state and government power since Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. Despite record inflation, a labor shortage, and anemic recovery numbers, as part of this plan, President Biden and his allies in Congress are proposing the largest tax increase in modern American history. And a new analysis concludes that workers, retirees, and small businesses will bear the economic brunt of the proposal. AMAC Action, our advocacy arm, is engaged in a call to action, and we have sent over 53,000 emails to Congress urging them not to support the capital gains increase, which the Democrats are using as a tool to help pay for their massive spending. This means that Americans, notably seniors, who rely on dividend income as part of their fixed retirement income may be affected. So when Biden promised no new taxes to those earning under $400,000, he wasn't telling you the whole truth. President Biden is urging Congress to pass an aggressive capital gains tax hike that will hurt seniors' retirement income. While his capital gains plan is focused on Americans making over $1 million per year, corporations will react by adjusting their dividend payments to help high-income earners avoid taxation. That will hurt everyday Americans who use dividend income. The shift will not only alter U.S. investments in the stock market, but it will also hurt millions planning those millions of people who are planning on retirement. The increase in the capital gains rate will decrease the long-term net worth of millions of retirees. Seniors subsidized by dividend income will see less liquid cash come from their investments and instead be forced to reduce their investments, putting millions of Americans in a worse financial position for their future. Because by taxing dividends at a higher rate, we're actually incentivizing companies not to pay them. Instead, it will incentivize them to do stock buybacks or simply hoard the cash. For example, in 2012, the long-term capital gains increase went from 15% to 20%. And what did we see? We saw a decrease in the number of dividends that were paid. And businesses, they sat on the cash. We need you to please contact your members of Congress to urge them to oppose increasing capital gains. This proposal will ultimately have the opposite outcome of the intended goal to tax the rich. While Democrats are determined to repeal the Trump tax cuts, the evidence is strong that the Trump tax cuts actually lifted the economic prospects of millions of working-class Americans. According to a report released on the two-year anniversary of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, altogether real disposable personal income per household had risen by $6,000. Per year since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was signed into law. And this represented the largest increase in decades. It thus appears that Democrats intend to repeat their favorite legislative strategy. In the famous words of Nancy Pelosi from the Obamacare push in 2010, you have to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it. With us now is Congressman Lee Zeldin. Impressive is one word for his exceptional background, but patriot, veteran, a man of principle, a selfless American, those are other terms that I would use to describe him. Congressman Zeldin deployed with the 82nd Airborne in Iraq in 2006 and was later a prosecutor with the Judge Advocate General Corps and is still in the reserves. As a member of Congress, he has been outspoken on behalf of constitutional principles in a time of intimidation, and he is unafraid to speak the truth. He has earned the respect of many for his straightforward, honest, and assessment of where we are. Congressman, beyond your race for governor and leadership in Congress, I just want to thank you for stepping up to meet the challenges of our time. And on behalf of our 2.4 million AMAC members, we welcome you.
Well, it's great to be with you, and that's a fantastic introduction. Look forward to today's conversation.
Excellent. Congressman, you've been a genuine leader on so many fronts. And many of our members have tracked your career with a real sense of hope. And I know that there's so much that we could cover today here, but looking at the national horizon, I want to really dig into your thoughts on Afghanistan. We see what I call is really a listless, indefensible Biden withdrawal, one which appears to have left Americans stranded by the hundreds, perhaps even thousands, along with our American allies. And so even leaving tens of billions of dollars in precious military equipment to the terrorist Taliban group. So we do know that Secretary of State Blinken, he was taken to task for his failed leadership. And you were among a raft of Republicans and Democrats who called for Blinken's resignation. Congressman, you're uniquely positioned to make that call as a veteran and as a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. So help our membership understand how serious the failure in Afghanistan was. And what does this mean for our future? How can we make sense of the death of 13 military personnel and the abandonment of Americans and allies behind enemy lines? So what do we do to hold these failed leaders accountable? What should we be doing now?
Blinken should resign, and that should just be part of the accountability. I don't believe that President Biden is up to the task at hand. He has not just a cabinet, but also you could call it a shadow cabinet. Ron Klain is chief of staff, Susan Rice, Anthony Blinken, who's actually not only Secretary of State, but also part of this small cabal. They might know how to, for domestic politics, spend trillions of dollars here at home. They know how to spin messages, but this is something that is way outside of their bandwidth ability, is tackling these national security foreign policy concerns. As we're going through that failed withdrawal, I had three concerns in order of magnitude. The first was Americans who were trapped in Afghanistan between that date and August 31st, the arbitrary date that was set. The second concern, which was obviously a greater concern, would be anyone who is stuck in Afghanistan after that date. But the larger concern, and getting into the heart of your question and understanding the magnitude of really just how bad this was, is that you had these other countries and bad actors who are watching the incompetency from our administration, our country, an inability to confront adversaries, an inability to strengthen relationships truly with allies or to be honest with the American public. So what happens when North Korea, China, Russia, Iran, or terrorist groups like ISIS, Hezbollah, Hamas, and others are choosing to fill a vacuum that they sense, a vulnerability at the highest level of the U.S. government? And that's why I believe that over these last few weeks, we have seen, by no coincidence, North Korea starting to test again their long-range missiles, restarting reactors in Iran, enhancing uranium enrichment more so than they were before. We are going to get tested, and unfortunately, I don't feel like the Biden administration is up to the task. There was so much that was done so wrong in Afghanistan. We had 13 Blue Star families become Gold Star families. This whole mess was foreseeable, predictable, avoidable. We did so much wrong, and the government, as I was mentioning, was misleading the American public. But the very worst part of this actually isn't within Afghanistan's borders. It's everybody else who are adversaries everywhere else who can choose to press forward in testing us, knowing that we're just not up for understanding how to appropriately and correctly rise to that challenge. There is a vacuum right now in leadership, and that falls squarely at the feet of Joe Biden.
Thank you, Congressman. Our members agree with you there, and certainly we're concerned about the southern border and folks that can come in through that southern border. What does this mean? You know, we've got an issue both here at home and overseas. So, you know, and Congressman, more than a quarter of our members are veterans. Three quarters have a veteran in their family, and, you know, they really, really appreciate folks like you that give for the future of our country. And, you know, we were founded, AMAC was founded by a veteran, after all. So today, many look at the disastrous withdrawal and wonder whether their service is appreciated. By way of example, as an indicator of the stress that veterans are feeling, the day after Kabul fell to the Taliban, we saw that the Veteran Crisis Hotline, which is the suicide prevention and support line for veterans and their families, they received like a 12% increase in calls, and the level has stayed high. So people are wondering, you know, really good and honest, patriotic Americans are wondering, how do they view the reality of Biden's mess? How do our veterans view the reality of what's going on? Can you offer some perspective there as a veteran yourself?
Yeah, I feel like veterans thoroughly understand, and in many cases, from the most personal of experiences and levels, because many of our veterans were in Afghanistan. Our veterans, whether you are a Vietnam vet, a Korean vet, World War II vet, or you're a post 9/11 veteran, we have lived through 20 years ago, the attacks of September 11, 2001. Now we actually have people who are deploying who weren't even alive on September 11, 2001, or they're too young to remember. So there is that new dynamic. But as far as trying to capture with a broad-based overview the veterans' perspective of what we witnessed in Afghanistan, it's a whole lot of feedback about what is identified as poor planning and poor execution with fatal consequences. This isn't something where I'm seeing veterans debating whether or not this was a good execution. As if you're going to withdraw, I think that history 200 years from now will be studying this on how not to withdraw from a country correctly. So the debate, I think, amongst the veterans community isn't as much about whether or not to withdraw. It was how it was done. And there's a whole lot of incompetency that I'm seeing across the board being recognized inside the veterans community.
Yeah. Congressman, you are a real patriot. And like many New Yorkers, I am so grateful to see someone of integrity who's concerned about the nation and the state that you live in. And so we know that you are running for governor. So let me pivot, if I may, to issues close to New York. We learned recently New York Governor Kathy Hochul is keeping several key members of disgraced former Governor Andrew Cuomo's team right there in Albany, including Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker. Now, public reports indicate that Dr. Zucker issued the controversial March 2020 order requiring nursing homes to accept COVID-19 positive patients from hospitals. What do you make of this, and what should be done? And as people here in New York especially are craving accountability for so much of what seems to be wrong, really, and adversely affecting our lives, what should be done?
Howard Zucker should be fired. He shouldn't have been kept on by the new governor, Kathy Hochul. Governor Hochul comes into this new position as governor. She immediately adjusts up New York State's count of nursing home deaths. Now, that's good, but it begs the question, one, why are you keeping Howard Zucker? And two is, why didn't you say anything earlier? Why were you actually covering for the administration and this health department when there was clearly, we all knew going back to spring of 2020, that there was an undercount of nursing home deaths. There was a cover up that she cannot possibly successfully convince anyone with that she just had no idea. I mean, this was something that was national news well over a year ago. So that silence is something really from scandal to scandal. And on all the different scandals, that she absolutely should have known better. The choice that she has is, do you want to say you were complicit or out to lunch? But there is no third choice. The other piece is that going back to the beginning of the outbreak and there was a shortage of tests and staff, the Cuomo-Hochul administration was providing preferential COVID testing to administration's family and friends at private residence. It was done by state health department officials, and then those samples were moved to the front of the line. Now, I don't know if Hochul's keeping Zucker on because that he knows something that he's not revealing publicly and is afraid that more will come out. Maybe Hochul's own family and friends were somehow connected to that investigation. I don't know. It's something for Kathy Hochul to explain why she's keeping Howard Zucker, what the justification is for it, and why he shouldn't be held accountable for this deadly nursing home order and cover up and the other scandals that are also being investigated.
Yeah, very good point there. One's got to wonder, for sure. You know, all Americans and New Yorkers, we have an interest in effective, positive leadership. And especially, it seems, the economy. You know, many people are really fearing, how are they going to make ends meet? It seems that, you know, really, at this point, anything can really tip the balance against them. A loss of a job, for example, inflation, which we know is coming, higher taxes, we're seeing that. And yet the government, you know, just continues to spend. And it seems that higher taxes are really a part of the Democratic policy plan, which is leading many to worry about the future. So according to Democratic House leadership plans, New York citizens could get hit hard by coming legislation. For example, the top earners in New York City could face a combined city, state, and federal income tax of 61.2%. How can Democrat leaders push this kind of burden on our citizens who are already struggling, and what should we be doing to assure a healthy economy?
Well, for one, the reason why they can is because they're in power with one-party Democratic rule in D.C., Albany, and New York City. Now, the power of the voter, of the New Yorker, impacted by rising taxes, rising cost of living, is to make sure that when these upcoming elections come up, especially the big one, November 8, 2022, that the pendulum swings back and that there's a balance of power again. And we could flip the House of Representatives from blue to red. We could take the gavel out of the hand of Pelosi and Schiff and Nadler and Maxine Waters' hands. We can flip the United States Senate. We can win back a whole bunch of Assembly Republican and Senate Republican seats here in state capitals like New York. We can change who is the governor of the state of New York, November 8, 2022. But the reason why the Democrats can do this is because they have the majority. And now with that majority, they're squandering it with policies where they feel like, one, the taxes have no effect on behavior. They feel like people aren't even leaving New York State. They'll say in response to a claim that people are leaving New York, they'll say, show me proof. Then when you show them the proof, they'll say, well, paying taxes is patriotic, which means that we have the most patriotic state in the union, because now New Yorkers, many New Yorkers, are paying the highest income tax rates in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And the impact on the average New Yorker, the average American, is one where you need to have a job and you have to be able to pursue an American dream where you can have home ownership, that maybe you have the ability to take a vacation with your family, nothing crazy, but just being able to get away, enjoy some time away from hard work. The picture of what the American dream looks like is becoming more and more difficult for too many New Yorkers. Homelessness is a huge issue. There are people in need of housing, in need of jobs, skills training, but also help for their mental health issues. For some, it's drugs. For others, it's alcohol abuse. There's no one-size-fits-all problem, challenge. There's no one-size-fits-all solution here. But I believe in the power of a job. And unfortunately, the consequences of the Democratic policies where, for example, they are incentivizing able-bodied adults to stay at home rather than to go back to work ends up resulting in that small business having their help wanted signs on the front door not being filled, hours being impacted, the economy ending up suffering, communities being adversely impacted, money that's not being spent, liquidity that is not passing through the system, all a consequence of this mentality that we should spend trillions of dollars more and then wake up the next day and immediately start brainstorming, how should we spend trillions of dollars on top of that? There's no end in sight. Every next big spending bill is viewed as a floor, not a ceiling for those in charge. And eventually just you have to stop it as the average New Yorker, the average American, and the best power to do that is going to be at the ballot box.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the importance of a job, because it sure does give one purpose. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing when you can get up and know that you're making a difference no matter what your job is, or do something that you love. And when we see the government trying to making it too easy, almost enticing and almost bribing people to stay at home, it seems like they're not helping, they're enabling, and there are going to be long-term consequences. So I agree with you. We need better people. It seems, though, that gone are the days, at least in some quarters, when bipartisanship really got any attention. Do you believe that the Democrats and independents are fed up enough, you know, fed up so much with the way things are going in New York, you know, in the nation as a whole, that Republicans could really gain, a chance to restore accountability and fix the state of New York?
100%. I was just at a group in the South Bronx. It was about 700 Hispanic voters. They are almost all Democrats. I was invited by a sitting Democratic New York City councilman who, in partnership with another Democratic New York City councilman, had me come address the group. The response was fantastic. The issues that they care most about are issues that we're on the right side of the aisle with. They want to support law enforcement more, not less, and repeal cashless bail and keep qualified immunity. They want to improve the quality of education in our schools and lift the cap on charters and to have tax credits for school choice and ensure that critical race theory is not inside of any school. We should send our kids to a school for a quality education, not an indoctrination or a brainwashing. But listen, I left that one group. You could say, hey, that's only one group. What does that mean? It's 700 people. It's a huge state of countless millions of people. Well, I went to Flushing, Queens, another borough, another very blue borough. And I was with a big group of Asian Americans. And that group was almost all Democrats. And that included a Democratic candidate for New York City Council who is going to get elected and was there supporting our campaign. And guess what? They were on our side of the aisle with the issues. We were talking about the same issues. And on education, they didn't like the fact that New York City Democrats are getting rid of advanced academics in the name of equity. That if your kid is reading at a higher reading level or doing math at a higher math level, there's a belief that they shouldn't have the gifted and talented program opportunity challenges because it's not fair to the other student who isn't reading or doing math that same reading level or a math level. So I have found firsthand by showing up, by having these conversations, that there are so many Democrats who are very frustrated, upset with the Democratic Party. They see the need for change, and it's impacting them where it matters most, like their ability to walk outside of their house at night, or their son or daughter's education, or their small business, or their job working for another small business owner. Or it's the desire for freedom, for respect for individual liberty. They want to see government respecting personal responsibility. And on so many different fronts, the Democrats are squandering this power they have.
Yeah. Well, you certainly represent a note of hope. And so, Congressman, beyond the confusion found in national and state COVID policy, right, we see rising crime, massive overspending by the federal government, taxes, regulations that are killing businesses, heavy burdens on the middle class. People do seem to be looking for a restoration of what you might call, predictable, honest, reliable, and accountable leadership at both their state and federal levels. So what should voters in this 2022 gubernatorial election focus on, and how would your leadership change their lives from infrastructure and reforming New York City's subway system, for example, to the state's economy?
We have a lot of different kinds of voters out there, and for some people, they're not even registered. My message to them is to get registered, that it's not just your right to vote, it's your duty to vote. It's your obligation to vote.
Amen.
That's my opinion.
Yes.
And if registered to vote and you haven't been voting, We still have some work to do. Listen, it's great that you registered to vote, but as we just pointed out to your neighbors, your friends who aren't registered, you all have to get out there and vote too. You're passionate about these issues. You feel the need to save our state. You feel like we're at a breaking point. You're at a breaking point. You feel like your community and state is at one. You're thinking about fleeing. You want to do something about it. You don't like the attacks on your wallets, your safety, your freedoms, the quality of your kids' education. Well, get out and vote. For the people who have been voting, there are ways to become even more educated, to vet out candidates, to make sure that they are stating on the record where they are on critical issues, that you are doing your part. Maybe it's being active on social media. Maybe it's writing letters to the editor, because those do get read depending on where you publish them. You can help make thousands of phone calls. The technology is better than ever before. It's never been so easy to make so many calls. You can knock on doors if you want to get out there on that beautiful fall day and help turn out the vote. There is always a little bit more that everybody can do. And in many cases, folks are motivated to do a lot more. For an individual who wants to donate $5 or $10 to a cause, they have the money to spare. That's fantastic. I had a fundraiser about a month and a half ago where after the speeches, the questions and answers, there were two waitresses working the event. They go up to my finance director. One gives $25. The other person reaches into her pocket, pulls out the last $19 of cash she has on her, and she donates the money to the campaign. She was there working the event. She was there to make money. And she decided that she was going to just donate her time and donate the money that she had in her pocket. And you know, that goes a long way. If somebody's out there and they say that they can only donate $5, hey, listen, if that's a lot of money for you, then donate $3. Every little bit helps. But for the person who wants to get out there and make a difference, you could go on your social media feeds right now. You could pick up the phone. You could write postcards to those in your neighborhood or friends and family. It all adds up when everybody does their part. So if you're not registered, get registered. If you are registered, not voting, make sure you vote. If you are voting, get informed, get active, make a difference. Because if you want the government that's going to have balance, if you want to see this pendulum swing back, it's not just about having a candidate who's all in. It's not about a candidate having a campaign team that's all in. It's about everybody everywhere being all in. And that means that every person who's watching this, we all have an important part to play in order to actually save our state and country.
Thank you, Congressman. And to let our members know, especially those here in New York, if elected governor of New York State, how will your leadership help change and better lives of New Yorkers?
For one, common sense. When you are enacting restrictions where a two-year-old is forced to wear a mask all day long, or the government's telling you can't go to the gym after 10 o'clock because if you go work out all by yourself late at night, you know, that'll spread COVID. But if you go work out with a big group at 8:30, that's okay because that mitigates the spread. People are scratching their heads with these policies. Yeah. You have essential workers working. They're in hospitals for the last year and a half. They have been working hard, long hours. Maybe they've had COVID themselves. They have the antibodies in their system. They're reading the science that says that they have this immunity because they had COVID. And now the government's coming in and saying that even though their body is filled up with antibodies, that they have to go get a test that for medical reasons they can't get. And if they don't get the test, that they'll lose their job. We shouldn't be incentivizing people to stay at home rather than go back to work when they're an able-bodied adult and there's an available job, unless they have a very strong, specific, compelling reason. We have to be supporting law enforcement more, not less. We need to repeal cashless bail and keep qualified immunity and pass a law enforcement bill of rights. Recognize their inherent right of self-defense. Make sure they have all the resources they need to do their jobs effectively, exceptionally. Make sure they aren't unfairly targeted by investigations. I was raised in a law enforcement household. I've found that law enforcement wants to hold law enforcement accountable when they do something wrong, but don't vilify the other 100% of that department and the law enforcement community. Yeah. And let's set our kids up for success in school. Just educate them, provide them a quality education, provide them choice and opportunity and hope. Make sure that they are challenged and tested to be the best of who they possibly can be. Don't try to indoctrinate them. Don't try to brainwash them. Don't try to dumb them down. Don't try to hold them back of opportunities to push them to go further. We need to do everything in our power to make sure that our kids are given the best opportunity of success. We have to control spending, which is out of control in the state right now. That's how you can better afford to make certain changes on the tax, fee, regulatory side. When you start desperately relying on all of these fees and taxes to support programs that the state can't afford, it all ends up resulting in more taxes, more spending, more taxes, more spending, and there's no end in sight. And unfortunately, the direction, the trajectory that New York State is heading is totally unsustainable. And that's why people are fleeing. They feel like their money will go further. They'll live life safer. They'll feel freer by being in some other state somewhere else. And I want to do my part to protect people's wallets, safety and freedom and quality education. That's why we're in this race. We got in on April 8th. We launched the campaign and been 2 months in. We had already been to 62 of all 62 counties in the state. We just keep on going. We're working hard. We're taking nothing for granted. It's important for everybody out there to take nothing for granted either, or we're going to end up with more of the same. And the consequences, unfortunately, end up being one where our state, our country isn't the best version of itself. But the vision for many in power right now is for our country, our state, to be like some other country somewhere else. And I believe in American exceptionalism. I'm unapologetic about American greatness. I believe that we live in the greatest country in the history of the world. We have the greatest military in the history of the world. And there's a lot for us to be proud of. We need to make it greater. And unfortunately, with what we have right now, it's going in the wrong direction. But I want to do something about it.
Well, for that, I'm very grateful. Congressman, what a privilege to have you with us here today to hear your vision and to reflect for a moment on real hope, accountability, and a sense of the future of New York and for our nation. So you have offered us some good answers, some optimism, and a sense of direction. I want to thank you so much for taking your time to help our 2.4 million AMAC members get a sense of your priorities. I want to thank you for defending our future and for your service as a veteran and congressman, and as a thoughtful American with real convictions. We are so pleased also to hear that you're in great health and will continue to pray along those lines. I also want to thank our AMAC members for tuning in today. If you have not downloaded the AMAC News app, you can watch, you can listen to today's podcast, you can track breaking news right on the AMAC News app. So please make sure to hit that subscribe button and follow, like, and share wherever you are on social media. Until next time, I am Rebecca Weber. This is your podcast, Better for America. Thank you for being here, and God bless you. Until next time, have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.